Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, let's go. You're rolling with Jason and John, 92.9 FM ESPN. We're doing it on a Friday. Get in the car. We're about to roll around Memphis. Might hit the roundabout. John, how have we not talked about the new roundabout in town? Y'all folks forget, we've had a roundabout for a long time. That's 240. We've been going round and round here on Memphis roads for a long time. We haven't mastered 240. How are we going to master a roundabout?
I don't know about that one.
I am here with my friend, my brother from another mother. His name is John, always in a good mood on Fridays, Martin. We also have King George on the ones and twos, filling again admirably. Isn't high enough a compliment to how well he has filled in for our man Brad Carson, who remains in Chicago on biz. He'll be back next week.
We got word back from BC. He's having a great time up there.
Of course he is. It's the Shy. It's one of the great cities of America. And I can certainly speak to that as a son of a father who was born on the South Side. Just like our new Pope.
That's right.
Now, yesterday, John, real quick before I hand off my monologue to you, the Cubbies, my Cubbies, tried to claim the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on the marquee and everything.
Yep.
We lied on him.
Yep.
We lied on him, King George.
It's day one.
The Cubs lied on the new Pope. What's that mean for the Cubs season and going forward? We shall see. But the man is not a Cubs fan. He's a White Sox fan. Oh, boy. We're off to a bad start.
Yep.
How are you guys?
Doing great, brother. Doing great. Thanks for asking.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, I've read a lot about the significance of the American Pope yesterday. I didn't really understand the gravity of it in the moment.
Yes.
But I've read a lot about it since then.
Good, because I have more questions for you about it.
You can answer them. I can, but we're going to have to do it off the air. Oh. It's not going to be an on-air combo.
Oh, okay.
Basically,
we can keep that he's from Chicago.
The idea
we did that yesterday.
The idea with the Pope is that there was never an American Pope because the Catholic Church said we don't want to give America too much influence, right?
Okay.
They have too much influence as is economically, politically. Yes. They have too much influence as is. If we turn it over to America religiously, then they'll have influence over everything. The implication is that America has lost its way and they need intervention spiritually, and that America and this country needs intervention spiritually. Hmm. And so by choosing and electing an American Pope from Chicago, Illinois, who attended Villanova University, that some who may be wayward may see the error of their ways with the icon of Christianity, Catholicism, from America. That's the idea. So, it's heavy. It's deep.
You have started us off with a heavy foot on the gas.
I told you, I said we might have to have it off the air, but you wanted to ask questions.
Deep well, in his bag.
Well, you said you weren't going to do it. I didn't ask the question, but we got it anyway, didn't we?
We did. We did.
Wow. This will not be a light Friday.
It will be a light Friday after
okay.
that.
Oh, all right.
It will be a light Friday.
Okay.
But.
Wow.
I you know what? I think it's, I agree.
Let me rewire my brain
time.
Here.
It's time. It's time. So we're.
Thank you for that.
Pope Leo.
Thank you for this.
Welcome. Welcome, Pope Leo. Not a moment too soon, my friend.
Respect, Burger.
Yes, absolutely. Man, we got a new Pope, and Memphis Louisville is back on, baby.
Man, what a great thing.
What a great thing. We got a lot to talk about today.
I agree.
I saw a story that should give you some, maybe some hope on Dane Danger.
Again?
Another one? Another one.
Jeff might have touched on it with me this
yes,
morning.
Yes.
I'd love to discuss it again. As our optimism grows, it feels like.
That's right. So we're going to get into all of that today here on the show. 1125, you know him, you love him. He's Anthony Sane. He's going to join us, and we'll talk to him about the Grizzlies, their offseason, the hire of Isolo. We have not gotten a chance to catch up with him since that hire.
He also had a Jalen Wells interview.
Yeah.
That we will talk
okay,
about.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that and all that with Anthony Sane at 1125. Anthony Sane from the Anthony Sane Show. Then at 1:35, Parthu Pajai is going to join us by phone. He is in Raleigh on vacay, but nice enough to join us this okay. week. We'll talk to him about, you know, the news. Memphis Tiger basketball, getting the series back on with Louisville. He's going to be too young probably to you know, really remember the heartbreaking moments, right? My guess is he probably doesn't remember much about that Darius Washington moment. I mean, that was really mine, right? It was 05. I was 14.
2014 was a good year for Memphis and Memphis-Louisville. You beat them twice
yep.
in the 1 year you got them in the American before they bolted
yes.
for the ACC.
And that was the year they won the title, was it not?
Bro, I'm pretty sure it was. They won. They were top 10 both times you beat them. That was a good year for Josh.
That's when you thought...
Patino, man. It was live.
That's when you feel like that team actually...
You don't remember?
I
told Jeff, I can't remember the details. I said I was going to get them. I couldn't get to it, but... There were like finger sign accusations, and Patino was going nuts, and all this stuff. You know, when you beat them there that year, and then they come down here and you beat them again. They were ranked again. It was a great year, and really was the last. It was the last time you were conference members. I think the history goes back over four conferences, but it was that 1 year where Louisville's an American Athletic Conference team for the the whole big fake Big East thing, all that stuff, and Louisville ends up in the ACC. Great thing about that series now they kind of need you as much as you could use them.
Yep.
And that'll be what we'll discuss.
Yep. So we'll get into all that on the show today. But, yes, the news is it was announced yesterday that after an 8-year hiatus, Memphis and Louisville are back on. And they're not back on for just a one-off like that Madison Square Garden game in 2017.
Right.
This is a 6-year, 6-game series. That starts next year in Louisville in December, and then it comes back to Memphis in 26-27, and then the next four after that are still yet to be determined. So I can't even necessarily call it a home-and-home. I think it will probably end up being a home-and-home, but there may be some neutrals in there. You just never know. It is a 6-year series between these programs, and, you know, Louisville next year is going to be a top-three program. I mean, they're probably preseason top-three. They're going to be awesome.
Wow. Pat Kelsey.
Yeah.
So quickly.
Yes. Penny said, renewing this rivalry with Louisville means everything, not just for Memphis, but for college basketball as a whole. These are the kinds of games that bring out the best in both programs, energize fan bases, and are the reason players want to come to Memphis. There's real history and passion between us, and we are thrilled to help bring it back and give our fans and the sport something special to look forward to the next 6 years. I mean, obviously, this is a series you've played 90 times. You've shared four different leagues. You're basically, before they went to the ACC, you're mirror images of each other. You're these important urban universities that get overlooked by the state school. Hmm. You have the railroad track running through campus. You know, you have proud fan bases. You have money. Very similar. Very, very similar programs. And I don't know why, Jason, that the series died after 2017. It feels stupid that it did.
They didn't need you.
But it says to me that, A, Pat Kelsey is not ducking smoke. But B, that Memphis is proving itself as a brand and a program that's worth getting on your schedule.
Well, it's that. I agree with you 100%. I think an important factor, too, is that look at the weakening of the ACC. You're hitting them at a time where they're not getting as many quality wins as they normally would, right? That's why Rick Barnes can say, we don't need them, and be right. It's what the SEC is now.
That is true.
It's you're catching Louisville now. That's why I said, you know, they need you in a way as much as you need them, because they are not getting. Look at the ACC now. It's a wreck. Now, do we expect it to bounce back from the joke that it was last year? Yes.
Right.
But will it ever be on top again? Maybe not.
Yeah.
And so that's the other part of this. And to your point, Memphis, under Penny Hardaway, has risen to a point of relevance, top 25-ishness every year. You finish that this year, where even if you lose the game, right, if you're Louisville, playing them now in what should be a non-conference, good quality opponent, it doesn't hurt you that much. That's credit to Memphis.
Yep.
But also, it's where Louisville is right now in terms of the way it looks at the ACC. See, again, that's the difference between these other power programs that go out. Big 12 teams, SEC teams, got quad one games all day long. You know, so Louisville, with those numbers having lessened last year,
yep,
in a now weaker ACC, could use you on the schedule as a, boom, circle it, quality game because of where Penny's got Memphis. So it's beautiful. It's awesome. That and particularly, as you said, John, whether it's here or there over the last four of the six, it's great that you've got them back on the schedule. It's useful for both programs, but it's that it's 6 years, you know, of this.
Absolutely.
Because in the end, right now, who you play, and I tell you what, I mean, the concessions Memphis is willing to make to go there first, this matters here because aren't Mississippi State and Ole Miss are on the road this year, right?
Yep.
I mean, you could have used them on your home schedule immediately. You allowed the series to start there. It's just, again, having this at a time where actual butts in seats, we keep hammering this, 6,500 last year. The Ole Miss and Mississippi State games, now regional rivalries, certainly Ole Miss more so than Mississippi State, but you call them that, I mean, because both fans, sets of fans come, those games were the only ones over 10,000 for you in turnstile count. We call it actual butts in seats. Having Louisville and Memphis is that. And you need that right now.
Absolutely.
Because you're limited in what in everything else that you can do in terms of trying to get fans down there. You can do all the tricks and do all the offerings, but what you need are teams that fans want to go down and see, and the little bonus, their fan base will hopefully come as well.
Absolutely.
And so that's great for both sides. It's great that it's happening right now.
Yep.
And Memphis, you look at Louisville right now, it makes all the sense in the world. Now you can talk to them. Your leverage is greater because Louisville doesn't have what it usually would, which is all those quality opportunities in the ACC.
Exactly. No, I think you laid it out well. I mean, I wish that Rick Barnes didn't have the get out of jail card.
It's 100% is what it is.
Because you're right. The ACC, I mean, what was it, a three-bid league last year?
Was it? How far did it? I want to look at its conference strength, but we know it dropped off the map. I mean, in terms of
Duke was in. let's see.
Duke. I had my 2014 season up because it was such a year for Memphis against Louisville. Beat twice that year.
Duke, Louisville, and Clemson. That was it.
We don't count UNC in that, do we?
Oh, they did make it, didn't they? You're right.
They did end up in the bracket.
So a four-bid league. All right. So Duke, Louisville, Clemson, North Carolina. They made it. All right. But that's like historically low, right, for the ACC.
I mean, it had been the best league, you know, at one point. Historically considered that.
Exactly. And you know, who knows?
Because, listen, the Virginias and them may never come back.
They may not. I mean, Syracuse may not. Louisville may Virginia may not. Florida State may not.
Thank goodness for Pat Kelsey.
So
Louisville was a wreck.
I honestly didn't want to, like, everything you're saying is 100% true. I did not want to give Rick Barnes the out by saying it, though. You know what I mean?
It's what he uses, but we know here it's personal.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Again, Penny Tubby Smith,
yes,
what you did.
Yes.
But he can hide behind, I don't need you.
Louisville can still say, like, we're playing Duke twice. We're playing North Carolina twice. We're playing Clemson twice. We really don't have to schedule Memphis. But, you know, they recognize that in a year where they're going to be gunning for a number one seed, scheduling with courage outside of your conference it could possibly be the difference.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, I give everybody involved a lot of credit because you just don't see a series like this as much anymore. You know, especially from power league team to non-power league team. You know, the home and home 6 year series, they ain't happening. You're a bye game, mm-hmm, right? Like, you know, AAC teams are bye games. Like Temple's a bye game for somebody. South Florida's a bye game for somebody. But, you know, 6-year series. It just speaks to the power of, and the brand still in the relevance of Memphis basketball.
Yeah.
Especially under Penny Hardaway. Honestly, it's been the thing I believe he's been the best at since he got the job. Is scheduling. You know, especially in a time where you're seeing less and less political will to do that because of those reasons that you laid out.
Yep.
He's still getting these games. I mean, getting them into the Baja Mar is not insignificant because you can play Purdue. I mean, you'll get your ass kicked.
It was big last year.
But, yeah,
this
you know,
set up for...
you could play Purdue. I mean, that's impressive.
It's two All-Americans they got back, right?
Yeah, two. Yeah. I mean, you're going to be a huge underdog.
Well, if you face them in the title game, right? Because you would hope you're opposite.
You would hope, but I could see Memphis getting...
You're going to get Purdue first round?
Well, because you go against Memphis.
But you'd give them the easiest Wake Forest, right?
I mean, how much different is it than Memphis, right?
I mean, Penny doing a little better than our man Forbes, is he not? I think so. Look, I don't know what Forbes has brought in this year.
Yeah, I don't know what Memphis has brought in this year, quite frankly.
I would hope we're not the raw meat they're putting in front of Purdue to make it to the title game in that one. I pray.
I don't know. My hopes aren't necessarily that high.
I heard
high.
It might be Texas Tech was the word, or Munsey mentioned that I heard today. That the word is that Texas Tech's the other team. I don't know what that means to you, but
what does that mean to you? You're asking about Texas Tech.
Okay.
I mean, Memphis will be an underdog in either one of those games.
Memphis would be the Wake Forest for Purdue, we're the raw meat for...
Texas Tech is not playing Purdue in the first game.
What are they going to be ranked?
It depends on the way you're talking about them,
I'm assuming they're going to be pretty highly ranked.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. I mean, they're going to be top 25.
And I'm attributing that to Munsey. I'm pretty sure I heard that from him today.
Yeah,
that the word is Texas Tech, but he said we'll see. He didn't pin them down.
Way too early has them 22.
Go
ahead. ESPN.
Good. I mean, if we got Dane Danger back,
you're going to play Texas Tech or Purdue, one of the two. I mean, you're not playing Wake Forest. They're not going
to play. My point is, Wake Forest is going to go to Purdue. You're playing Texas Tech first round.
Yeah, you're probably right.
They're going to give the weakest team to Wake for the easy win to Purdue to get to the title game.
You're probably right. Either way, if it's Texas Tech, it's
two good ones you're getting.
Exactly.
That's what we've discovered, the revelation. You could get
two ranked matchups there. You obviously, Ole Miss on the road is going to be a ranked matchup. Mississippi State could be a ranked matchup.
Right.
Louisville's going to be a ranked matchup.
My only nag is the home schedule next year. But because you're playing two and not three in one of these tournaments, you're going to have an opportunity for an extra, I would think, home game, you see what I'm saying, on Bamar?
Yeah.
And maybe you get you something real nice in there, you know, a one-off. Mm-hmm. But they need it, John, because Mississippi State, Ole Miss, all on the road, you've agreed that, you know.
Yeah, what's their home? Do they have a home schedule next year?
Well, I think you get like San Fran back, right? Some of those were the home that come back.
UNLV.
But it's not teams that get you up. UNLV, Josh, that'll be a story. It's not teams that get 10,000 plus down
there.
No,
not at all.
So we could have used, you know. But point is, you'll get through that. Louisville was not going to agree
as the number three team in the country to come to you first.
You had to make concessions.
Yeah.
Especially when they're going to lock it in for 6 years.
Exactly.
No matter where it is at 100%. The first two. Yes.
I mean,
you take that all day.
It's seriously remarkable that they committed to this thing for six years.
And I'm wrong. I mean, I'm not wrong, but I mean, ACC's been down fifth-ish in KenPom rating in terms of conference rating for a while now. That's where it was last year.
No, I mean,
it's been weakened for a while. They have to do it.
I mean, the ACC, you remember the story came out a couple weeks
ago. They need help.
They're trying to lower their amount of games that they're playing
in
conference because of that.
Yeah, because it's killing them.
So this is Louisville.
The bottom has gotten worse. Virginia, we don't know, is in the abyss right now.
Yeah.
A team that they normally would depend on for strength. And so, yes, if this point still stands, Louisville needs you.
Yeah.
Because there are fewer quality wins in conference play.
Yeah, but that was a point that I was not that interested in making on the behalf of Rick. I don't want to give him an out.
It's not an out for Rick. It's props to Pat Kelsey.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's opportune. It doesn't mean that's the reason they're playing you. I mean, they respect the history of the series, too, which is just as rich as any in Memphis history. I think with Southern Miss and Cincy are up there a number of times, probably Louisville's right there.
So Louisville is a great series. You know,
it's exciting. It really is.
Hitman reported yesterday that I want to say he said that Memphis is targeting Alabama, Missouri, and Duke. Memphis and Duke will never play a game as part of a series.
You don't think even when Nolan Smith and the goodwill, the goodwill he can bring to talking to them at least?
I think it's going to be very difficult.
You at least get it going or talk to him while he's on staff, right?
I think it's going to be very difficult because you know, there's no guarantee that Nolan would even be here when that game went off.
That's my point. That's why you give it a shot now.
Yeah.
While you've got him and you bring, you know, you let him make the call.
Duke will not play Memphis, obviously.
This dude's dismissing it.
Alabama makes a lot of sense. They've already done that, right? Alabama and Memphis have already had
it. I'm just saying Alabama's in that same boat that Tennessee is, where they got all the quality of ops they need.
Yep.
You know?
He mentioned Missouri. I mean, you know, the Missouri series didn't do a lot for me.
Solid this year. Paid off this year.
It did, but it wasn't a ton of juice with it, you know?
I had that game. I think you're right, especially on attendance for that. Because didn't they come here this
year? It was like one of the first home games.
It was 6,092.
Yeah. So
turnstile count.
Not really super thrilled about that one.
That's what I'm saying. What other SEC teams would up that besides Ole Miss and Mississippi State? That would agree.
Yeah, that's
could you
the
get
problem.
Bruce to do it?
You know, you've played Bruce, right?
I'm talking about, but that was in Atlanta, neutral, right?
Yeah.
Could you get him to come here? Is that going to be a deal where he says?
I mean, I do because
Bruce understands.
Bruce, absolutely. He
values this program in a way that, or I should say, respects it, right? Yes. That he's not going to do the pull the barn stuff.
Yes, like you know, the key is getting SEC teams that would move the meter and matter, not just
agreed.
You know,
and
so
that's I'm looking at him. Like, how many of them other than. I'm trying to get 10,000
plus
butts.
I think
Bama
is prime, you know.
Yeah, well, it did that, didn't it?
Yes.
When it came, you were there.
I don't think Florida would agree to do it, but they would.
They don't need you.
You know, Arkansas, come on, let's go.
Unfortunately, the coach is not going to do it. He's only going to do neutral. We need him here. I'm looking for actual butts and seats here. Right? It's to the point that you made. We need opponents, Memphis fans care about to get people down there. I wish he would do it. I can give him the pitch, and really, but no, he's going to be like too much to lose. Still, I could get egg on my face losing to Memphis there. I think he would probably maybe do a neutral at this point.
He would not put himself
still
in
an
position
egg
to
in his
lose
face
a game
if he loses
Memphis.
To Memphis. Forget the schedule and quality of the win, whatever, or the loss. It's about losing to Memphis. I don't think he could stomach it here.
No, you're right. He won't do it. You know, I would try Texas. I mean, I would try. Sean Miller, that'd be fun.
I like Bruce.
You know,
I like Bruce. Again, these are SECs that we're trying to get. We'll come to Memphis, home and homish.
Yeah.
So we can get 10,000 plus turnstile count.
Exactly.
Because those are becoming rare.
Yeah.
And hopefully Louisville will be that.
Yeah.
You know, to bring it back around.
Anyway, good stuff. Good stuff for Memphis. The schedule is filling out here. It's coming together. It looks like it's going to be. Probably given when you take into consideration that most of these games are on the road, it's probably going to end up being even tougher than last year.
It was fourth in the country last year.
But how many of those games were, like, I guess Maui was neutral?
You're going to need Texas Tech to be the game for that and for them to be really good.
Clemson was there.
I mean, you were fourth in the country in non-conference.
I mean, it's going to be comparable, though, because, I mean, Louisville's
top three.
Comparable,
I'm with you. It'll be tough to be tougher.
Ole Miss will be ranked. If Mississippi State is ranked. You know, that'll be
that we need it.
Yeah, but it's gonna be super strong again. Top 25.
So, but you have to.
Yeah.
As you well know.
Yep. Exactly. So credit to Penny for doing it, and credit to Louisville's officials for seeing the vision, and not saying, we don't need Memphis.
No, man,
like some places would.
Shout out to their AD and to Pat Kelsey.
All right, we'll come back. Anthony Sank gonna join us. We'll talk Grizzlies with him. His thoughts on Isolo, the next steps for the Grizzlies and more. Stick around, Jason and John. How do you turn to FM ESPN?
Anthony Sane is the host of the Anthony Sane Show on Bluff City Media. New episodes every Wednesday and Fridays. Make sure you're checking it out. Underground King of Memphis Sports Media, Tribal Chief of Grizz Twitter, independent journalist and founder of Asylum Media Group, father of five-star 2032 multi-sport prospect Gabriel Sane. Follow him on X at Sane Asylum. He recently had a one-on-one interview with Memphis rookie forward Jalen Wells. I'm excited to ask him about that interview and get into it. But first, Sane, and welcome, I must ask you, we now have a, you know, it didn't happen until after we got off the show last week, so we didn't have a chance to talk to you about it in terms of the naming full-time of Tuomas Isolo as the Grizzlies' head coach. That happened about 2 p.m. on Friday, so we didn't get a chance to talk to you about it. Your thoughts, my friend?
I've been behind the hiring of Thomas Eastlow the entire time. I mean, nothing's really changed on that. Yep. I like what I've seen in him so far as a coach. I think that I'll just be giving the same rhetoric that everyone else is giving when it comes down to him as far as, you know, 15 games, two practices. Right. This team has had legacy issues on offense and defense, and he came in and did what, you know, the rational thing to do was let the guys do what they know how to do. Remove some of the things that kind of trim some of the fat maybe as far as not run certain plays, but you can't install a new offense. You can't install a new defense, but just I think two things that did happen in his favor, even in the short time that he was here, is that you got buy-in from the best players on your team. You know, John Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr. all seem to be down with him being here. And he also just, he's got a resume. He's got a resume that shows he's been very innovative on the offensive end. Has a good defensive philosophy, is a good leader of men in this time in Europe. And I'll just sum it up this way as far as my excitement level, whatever. If the Grizzlies had to fire Taylor Jenkins at the end of the season and they made an announcement that they are hiring this guy who may very well be the best coach outside of the NBA, or they hired this guy that's the best coach in college basketball, like whatever you do, like this guy who's not in the league, but he's proven to be a very good coach. Mm-hmm. My excitement level would be high. I'd be optimistic. Okay, cool. We hiring like this really good EuroLeague coach. Like there's been guys in the past that have been rumored to be on our, you know, coming to the Grizzlies that had, you know, previous EuroLeague success that I was excited about personally, other people were excited about. Or it's any college coach or any guy that's basically outside the NBA that people are saying, this guy's really good, he's done this and that, this is his resume. I would have some level of optimism about that, right? So I don't feel any different because he was put in what was a pretty messed up situation, man, to be put into, to be expected to take over the realm of a playoff team with 9 games left in the season, including having to play some of the best teams in the West during that stretch, and also having to go into a play-in slash playoff situation and end up playing against, you know, an historically good team in Oklahoma City Thunder. So I'm not going to knock him for in that situation because I still see, even with all the turmoil that happened at the end of the season, I still see what looks to be a good coach. I've done, you know, kind of research on him, watching interviews, kind of hearing what other people have to say about him, and I think he's going to be really good for us next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question I've had just with everybody is mm-hmm. I don't his basketball acumen is just obvious, right? Like, come on, mm-hmm. bro. It's just like when you come over to the NBA, bro. This is an entertainment league, and you got to manage entertainment. You got to manage personalities. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah.
And I think like that's we won't know until we know on that. I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but I think the thing with that is even with that is that we've seen the type of coach that the players kind of gel with, or the guys kind of like. They kind of like a guy who's pretty much a player's coach but has a little edge to him. I think that's what his resume suggests that he is. A lot of people are saying, like, you know, this team needs an adult, or this team needs this drill sergeant type coach. I do not think these are the type of guys that will receive that type of coach at all. I don't think they'll take that type of coaching style. I think that these guys are a little bit more adult than we kind of give them credit for, and I think that they I don't think that type of coach is what the Grizzlies are looking for, or really just any team is looking for, man. Like, I heard somebody saying this yesterday. Like, you criticize the Grizzlies for not going to get a Mike Malone or a Mike Brown or whoever, whatever these coaches are. Those guys are still unemployed. Like, those guys aren't working for anybody right now. Like, nobody went out and got those guys, right? So I'm not really going to knock the Grizzlies for not doing it either, man. Like I talked about last week, if you're looking at history, like who those guys have been, and I had people saying that the Grizzlies, like as soon as we got off the air last week, the Grizzlies hired Tomas Eastlow when I made my case for why you should go ahead and hire him, right? Remember, I was going off about that last week, and then they hired him as soon as we went off the air. But like I said last week, man, Phil Jackson, Steve Kerr, Pat Riley, whatever you're doing, these guys have all been first-year coaches that came in to teams that were experienced teams. They didn't come take over young teams, and they took those teams to the next level. So it could go either way, man. But I'm willing to see, you know, how it works, let him get his own system in, let us get his training camp, all those type of things, and I think they'll be good.
Zach Kleiman got backlash even mm-hmm. nationally, right, when he fired Taylor with 9 games left.
Right, rightfully so.
Right, and optically it wasn't a good look. But he went ahead and did it. I'm asking you this. If he fancied Isolo as a future head coach of the Grizzlies, say wouldn't it have been smarter in terms of front officing to go ahead and fire Taylor? you took so a lot of people would say back to that, right? Well, you can't fire Taylor Jenkins at that point, right? Based on what he'd done or everything else. But this man had clearly already decided on at least a guy that was getting head coaching interest. I want him in my organization, and but you know, we can all say it. Probably fancied him again as a future head coach. So shouldn't have Klieman have done it when he cut Taylor's you know what's off by firing the assistant staff then.
Yeah.
And then you're not wasting potentially a season in terms of losing guys. Zach Edey getting thrown back and forth because one coach don't want to play him anymore, drop him. Then the other one comes right in, puts him back in. Zach Edey's revitalized, playing well. But Zach's, like you said, Zach set up that bad situation. So since you took some heat at the end, especially the way you handled it with nine games left, shouldn't you just taken a little bit of heat at the front and done this originally?
Yes, when they sat down with him last summer and he traveled to Paris wherever he met him at and interviewed him and all these type of things and was convinced that he was the guy that he wanted, he should have hired him on the spot. He should have let Taylor Jenkins go then. Because if you had the conviction to realize Taylor really ain't my guy, but I'm going to see how this kind of hodgepodge is thrown together. It was too many cooks in the kitchen, man. You had too many guys, right? And there's no way you can expect that to work. And it cost you a season. I think that it caused a lot of turmoil on this team because if we notice it as fans and we notice it as media, the players are right there. They notice the same thing. This guy ain't a regular assistant coach, right? This guy don't seem like he's supposed to be here. This guy seems like he was hired for something else. And then, you know, of course, stories are coming out with the whole buyout thing.
Right.
That the reason why the country is upset was because it was told to them that he was being hired to be the head coach. So The cat kind of out of the bag, but as far as those kind of things go, and they feel like the Grizzlies didn't keep their word as far as they brought him in as an assistant. So the country was a little bit upset about that whole thing. But so you definitely should have done that, and you would have got criticized anyway. And if your concern was if we let Taylor go, he's gonna go to another school, another team, and be good. That may be the case now. He might get a job this year. He might get a job in a couple years. You know, the Spurs job, he was kind of in the line for that. If that happens, man, you still stand on the decision you made.
Right.
But all those things go back to something that is a constant fair criticism of Zach Klieman, that he's very green in his position. He's been doing it for a while, but the fact that he started so young, there's still so many growing pains he's having as a GM to understand how to make those type of decisions, right? How to trade that extra draft pick to make a deal happen, or to not overvalue a guy, or to do the thing that you feel in your gut, right? You know, and instead of worrying about the perception of it, he has to learn those type of things over time. And whether or not he's going to be given that much time to do those type of things are still completely up in the air.
Right.
But that definitely is something that the team and the organization is paying for, with him not being able to just stand on his guns. Because if they had to fire Taylor Jenkins and we had to hire Isolo, I think we would have been probably a little better than we were this year. I think certain things would have been done a certain way. And then if you think about it, man, just think about this. Like, I'm watching the playoffs now, right? And I'm just thinking about the whole thing. If I'm Zach Klieman, right? Let's go back to the beginning of the season. The three of us had the same conversation. Like, if I'm Zach Klieman, and I hired Taylor Jenkins, right? And I've got Tomas Isolo, who I know I want to be the next coach. I'm probably hoping that Taylor Jenkins fails early so that I can justify firing him and we can get this thing out of here. You remember the beginning of the season when they were just running really weird, like, minutes restriction stuff and all that type of – you remember that? Like, it was, like, super weird.
Yeah,
like,
I just thought from the way Isolo's talked, that's sort of him, too, on his style. Now, that's where – but what he said is he'll make the adjustment.
But that ain't what we saw, though. That's not what we saw him playing 78 guys.
You're talking about something different.
You know,
yep.
Yeah. Now, what I'm saying is, you remember we were watching it, and, like, it was, like, super weird because Ja, Dez, and Bane were playing, like, less than 25 minutes per game in the beginning of the season. And we were like, is that a front office call? Is that a coaching call?
Yes, I remember that.
Are they warring against each other? How do we know that Zach Klieman went, like, let me screw Taylor Jenkins and say, hey – and just do this whole weird minutes restriction thing.
That's what I'm saying. If he set up the failure, it's even worse. You know what I'm saying? But you had to have the foresight.
The team ended up so good. Yeah. And I think the team ended up good in spite of a kind of a rocky start. They ended up being really good. And then you're stuck in the hole where you're like, okay, I can't fire them now because they're good. So they waited till the first time that they really fell off, and then you let them go. But if you had just fired him in the beginning, I think things would have been much better now. Zach Edey probably would have been rookie of the year.
You're running more pick and roll, as we saw.
Right. Ja would have looked like Ja. Maybe some of the injuries he had would not have happened because instead of him being on the receiving end of an alley-oop from Jake LaRavia, Ja's the one passing the ball to Jake or whoever, you know what I mean? Because he's got the ball in his hands. So,
He set up the mess.
Kleiman definitely need all of the criticism, all of the down talking he gets because of that. He definitely deserves it for sure.
Yeah, talking to Anthony Sain here, host of the Anthony Sain Show, Bluff City Media. All right, so I mean, I guess just in terms of the next, you know, month, the next 2 months. I mean, are you does Isolo make continuity more likely in your mind? Like, what do you just sort of what do we think?
Yeah, because I think the team knew he was going to be the head coach next year before it was out in the public. So I'm assuming, man, that on when they did the exit interviews, that probably came with him giving instructions to the guys of this is what we're doing next year. Work on this, work on that. I'm really hoping that happened. I don't know. I'm hoping that happened. Right? I'm hoping that they already knew he was going to be the guy and it was just a formality, or they were waiting for us to talk about it on the Jason and John show before they make the announcement. But I'm hoping that's they've already put those things into play, man. I'm hoping that the fact that he's already there, that he's somewhere in the lab trying to figure out, okay, I see I can get Ja to look like Ja again by putting him with Edie. Yep. How can I get Jaren looking like the guy that was all NBA level player? How can I open him up? Or, you know, are we keeping Desmond Bane? What type of guys do I want on this team going forward this summer? Because I'm sure that the lock and step is back, right? I'm sure that the walking hands and the flower patches is back again between him and Zach Kleiman. I think you'll see those two kind of working together to build this roster the way that Isolo wants it to be built, which probably would look like the way other teams are built throughout the NBA. So, I'm hoping that the continuity does factor, you know, into something as the season goes on.
Yeah, I mean,
the off season goes on.
Drew Hill and anybody I've talked to, and I think you too have convinced me that we should be rooting for Jaren Jackson here to make all NBA, even if those chances have gotten slimmer now with the way the Grizzlies finished the season. Because
no, that's not me at all. I've heard everybody saying,
are you not there? Are you not? Because that would give you a flexibility right now. Saying, I mean, you understand the numbers better than anybody. Would give you a flexibility right now to not just pay him. Yeah, he begins most pay, whatever it is. But that's after next year, and so it gives you a flexibility right now that helps you for next year. That, you know, him not making the team does not.
Yeah, I get all that. I get it. But I'm not saying I don't want Jaren to make it, because I don't want – if Jaren gets all NBA, I'm going to salute him. You know, he's one of my favorite players in the league. He's going to be making a ton of money, generational money for him and his family going forward.
Right.
I'm cool with that. Like, I'm not against him getting his money. But I'm not a fan of – I've never been a fan of Jaren making that type of money. I'm not a fan of anybody playing for this team making that type of money. Like, where's this Jaren job?
That's as real as it gets. Like, I hear you.
That type of money, is a lot of money, bro. And I see the national criticism that it comes to the guys like the Karl-Anthony Towns, like the Rudy Goberts, who are making that type of money. And I don't think that type of money is made for a guy like a Jaren Jackson Jr. I think there is a small percentage of guys in the league that should be in that supermax category, because you're talking about a guy that you can build a team around. And a guy who doesn't have the ball in his hands is not a guy, in my opinion, or in the history of the league, that I'm saying you're going to build a team around like that. Like, I understand the Tim Duncans of the world, you know, the Hakeem Olajuwons, the Shaquille O'Neals. I've seen all those guys playing in their prime. Sure, those guys are max-level players, you know, to have on your team. Mm-hmm. The Jokic, all those type of guys. But Jaren's just not the type.
I'm with
he's
you.
Not the type of guy that I'm putting – I would feel like spending that type of money on. And as far as the flexibility of things – figure it out, man. Like, you know, and I think Jaren wants to be here. I think that's a fact that a lot of people are kind of like
dismissing,
like not limited. Right. And I think if it comes down to it, Jaren's not going to leave Memphis to go play anywhere over a few million dollars. I think he's going to want to be here. I heard DeMichael Cole talking about this too, and I don't really know a lot of specifics of it, but I heard DeMichael saying, like, don't be fooled. At the end of the day, the Grizzlies, even if he doesn't get the supermax, the Grizzlies still can pay Jaren more than anybody else.
Yes, I heard that too.
Yeah, yep. So I'm not concerned about that. But that supermax, man, can be really crippling to a small market team.
That's real talk.
Especially when you got guys like Ja and Bane making max deals as well.
Especially
so
if they're not going to live up to it, like you said. Well, I mean, we just know he's not that. Yeah. I shouldn't say he's not that type of player, like you said.
Yeah, if Jaren was the guy who was like our clear best player on our team, like an Anthony Edwards type guy, or a Ja Morant type guy, or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, whatever you're doing, sure, that's a supermax level dude. You do what you got to do to keep that type of dude on your team. But that type of money for a Jaren Jackson Jr., who I said is one of my favorite players in the league, I love his skill set. I love what he brings to the Memphis Grizzlies on and off the court. But I just don't. I just can't. I'm not in that camp at all.
I respect
that's something the Grizzlies just need to figure out. Even if it means I lose to Santi Aldama.
Yeah, I respect it.
Or it means, like I'm not in the camp where if you can do, because there are ways they can get under the cap and make more money to pay Jaren. Mm. Even if that costs me losing Santi Aldama, so be it. For nothing. Like, you just have to let him walk, so be it. I'm not a fan of Jaren making $70 million per year. Like, that just sounds absolutely asinine. And I think it's unfair for him, man. Like, I don't want to put that type of expectation on a Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, when Jaren was making $8 million a year, people want him to be little Kevin Garnett. You know what I mean?
So yeah, he ain't going to say it's unfair. He's going to take that money and be smiling.
Yeah, he's going to take his money. Yeah. But you don't, like, we saw,
I hear
we
what
saw
you're
a grown
saying,
man.
Though. Yes.
We saw a grown man crying about the NIL money, right? And, like, you know, I don't think Jaren's ready for that level of critique and criticism, not just nationally but locally as well. If he's the highest paid player in the league, like the criticism that'll be coming his way would be insane. I don't. But another thing I will
say, y'all said that man gonna be out there like Coleman Hawkins right at the end of the season.
Yeah, man,
that's
like,
what he's talking about.
Like,
man, he wants this money, man.
Oh, he's not built for that.
No, man, he's gonna be getting torn up nationally. Saying is so right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
and the thing with that is, man, like I said,
we were tearing up Chandler Parsons for making 90, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Jaren would be getting absolutely killed, like, locally and nationally, if he's not looking like Kevin Garnett next year. Or, you know what I mean? Like, for real. Like, he would have to look like little Joel Embiid, like, to justify the amount of money that he'll be making next year, right?
Yeah.
Because think about it, he'll be the highest paid player in the entire NBA, bro. Like, and like I said.
Now, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me a little bit, Shane, of when, and this is kind of random, but when Derek Carr was the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. And everybody was like, why is Derek Carr the highest paid quarterback?
It was his turn.
But it was his turn.
And the man, he wouldn't be able to do anything wrong without getting killed every night about the type of money. He'll be called, you know, Mr. $350 million. That's what he'll get called. Like, it's not worth
they're
it. But
gonna,
at the end of the day, I'll
they're say They're going to be like $50 million per rebound or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing, too. I do not think Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to get named All-NBA. So I don't think there's anything to have to
the way
worry
finished.
About. I don't think that's a real thing. I think James Harden will get in before him. I think Sengun will get in before him. I think who's the other player? Harden, Sengun. I can't think of who else I said. I don't think Jaren's going to make it, man. But if he does, I'd be shocked. But I think so much of Jaren being in those talks earlier in the season to be All-NBA was connected to Jaren being on the number two team in the West and having a large gap between us and the teams behind us, right? I think it was connected to that. And I think you can't go through a season and not have a Sengun who is the second best team in the West. You got to have somebody out there rock his roster on their team. I just don't think he gets in.
Tell us and our listeners about what stood out to you most about your what looked like, say, an exclusive interview with Grizzlies rookie Jalen Wells.
Yeah, man, I'll say this, bro. You know me and my background of working with kids in the city of Memphis.
Yes, sir.
The city's youth, right, whether it's for schools, you know, nonprofit organizations, all these things, ministries. I've done this for a long time working with kids, right? And in that time, I've seen, you know, I've been a part of the Mike Conley Bowling for Backpacks. I've been a part of the Lionel Hollins, you know, backpack school drive giveaways. I've been a part of the Zach Randolph free summer camps with haircuts and backpacks and school supplies, the Tony Allen, you know, this and that, the Zach Randolph food giveaway. I've been in the presence of all these things in real time when it happened, right? With the Rudy Gay Christmas shopping sprees. I've been a part of all these things for kids, right?
Yep.
And I've always, not all those guys, but I've seen situations like that where the guy's looking like, I don't really want to be here.
Understood.
I got my PR agent with me. I got my reps with me, and I got team officials here.
I'd rather be somewhere else.
Yeah, man. I've been to all these events, right? Yeah. And I'm not saying that's for everybody, but there are some guys that I've seen that for. The guys who I really felt like had a heart, who kind of understood the heart of this city, were the Zach and the Tonys, right? Those guys, they got it, right? They may be looking like they just got out of bed, but they were there, and they had the heart for it.
Yeah.
I'm going to put Jalen Wells in the upper tier of what I've seen as far as that type of stuff over the years. And this is somebody who I wasn't watching through my television. I watched it standing beside these guys, having conversations with them. Jalen Wells is a gem to the city of Memphis. I'm saying that now, and I'm telling you, like I made this joke on my show the other day. Go check it out, Anthony Sane Show on YouTube. Check Anthony Sane Show or Bluff City Media, you'll find my show. I said this then, he's really what we thought Shane Battier was, because I've always thought Shane Battier was phony, right? But Jalen Wells is an amazing kid, bro. He's an absolutely amazing kid. He drives his own. He comes from practice. He's at the gym. He's at the FedEx Forum practice facility working out, and he drives over there in his own car, right? And he's in his own car. He pulls up. He was like, "Man, you good?" He's like, "Yeah, man, I'm nervous." He's like, He's like, "I'm really nervous about this," and he gets up there. And there's like, for the beta club, there's like four points that make you four things that like make you a beta club member, right? Mm-hmm. He has those 4 points in his notes, and he's like breaking those 4 points down, how those things apply to the kids' lives as little kids up to being an adult. I'm like, dude, you really put the work into doing this. Like, you really took this serious, right? And then when I told him that, like, man, did you know that this school was one of the first schools that integrated the city of Memphis?
Bruce Elementary, right?
Yeah, Bruce Elementary. Like, it was the Memphis 13. Three of those kids from the Memphis 13 started Bruce Elementary School. He said, "I didn't know that, but man, like, that's kind of crazy to know." And he stayed there. He took pictures, signed autographs, signed one grown man's shoes. Like, he stayed there as long as they wanted him to stay, bro. And he sat down and had the interview with me. And he's just a remarkable young man, man. I think he's going to be a gem to this city. He's somebody that I want to see wearing a Grizzlies jersey as long as we can have him wearing one. And like I said, it was a great interview. He kind of he said some things there that he said his plan is to play in the summer league. That's news. He said he likes the way that Coach Ichilo coaches. He's excited about him just working on rehab. And like, you've seen videos of him getting shots up in the gym and things like that. But I'm really excited to see him wearing a Grizzlies uniform for many years to come.
Man. Bro, everybody for the Grizzlies is playing in the summer league, bro. Edie's playing in the summer league. Jalen Wells playing in the summer league.
Which would make even more sense to have Isolo coaching in summer
coaching
league, right?
Team. Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's more games, and you may as well get your system in with all of them.
Yep. Right. Right. Yep. It start with those guys who are going to be a big part of what you do.
That's right.
Like, those aren't guys that are going to be riding your bench. Those, if Zach Edie's playing, GG plays, Jalen Wells plays, Scottie Pippen probably won't play, but, you know, Cam Spencer, those are guys that you expect to fill up roles this year. Cam Spencer is probably going to be our Luke Kennard this season. So,
yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And, man, I ain't going to lie, man. I'm back excited about what next year could look like. I think it's going to be probably a pretty busy offseason as well. So, I'm excited just to see how the rest of this goes off. I got my swagger back, man.
You don't think they're going to do anything with Bain, do you?
I think they are.
That's the action.
I think if Bane is here next year, it's not because they didn't try to move him. Like, that's real. I think that's a real thing. Okay. Like, for sure.
Saying, you're the best, dude. Thanks for the time, as
Thank
always.
Thank you,
man,
brother.
Thank y'all, bro.
Great work, man.
Hey, I got a major announcement.
Oh, please. Y'all, next week, too, man. Please make it, please.
Yeah, for sure. Next week, y'all getting it.
Oh.
Next week.
It's the tease.
Next week, yeah.
It's the fantastic tease. Major announcement from Sane next week on the show. You heard it here first. Sane, thank you.
Yes,
brother.
Sir.
Yes.
All right, thank y'all, man.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Anthony Sane. Big announcement next week. You ready for it?
Know that if he teased it a week early, it's big.
Yeah, it's got to be, right? Got to be big.
So he's got me excited. How excited are you about the Grizzlies next season? Are you excited, Sane?
TBD. Need a lot.
Yeah, I don't get that energy level from you.
Yeah, I need a
that
lot.
I get from Sane.
I need
25, 26 Grizz.
Yeah, I need some things.
Now, are you going to be, I don't want to pin you down, in Vegas for Summer League?
I'm going to go.
Give John a round of applause. Are you going to be able to work for us while you're out there?
That was the plan.
Oh, my goodness. And now, maybe during the time the Grizzlies are out there,
my plan is to go out there the first, you know, first couple of days.
Because I've just talked myself into Isolo's going to be coaching that team.
He should.
Of course he should, right? It'd be silly for him not to coach the team.
Yeah.
Unless he just thinks he's above it, and I can't imagine that.
Yeah. So my plan is definitely to go out there for a couple of days, and, you know, especially because the Grizz are sending all their guys.
You and Edie and Wells and Gigi.
Yeah, I'll definitely do the show from Vegas. I mean, there's really no – every time I go out to Vegas, I wouldn't be doing anything other than
– Well, that's what – now we have even more reason for you to be out there, you know, with this idea that it's going to be a lot of guys, as you've said.
Exactly.
But then, too, maybe Isolo, you know, doing it with them.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's the plan right now, brother.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Circa's got this.
We're
going
to win it.
Circa's got this unbelievable deal going on right now. I don't know if I talk about it on the show, but I've seen it on, because, you know, like, we're in a Great Depression. And so all the Vegas, you know, prices are like plummeting.
Oh, really?
So basically, like, what they're offering is you get two nights. You're all in, with including like fees and tax and resort and all that. You're all in for $400 for two nights, but it comes with a $100 drink credit and a $100 dinner credit.
Good grief.
So it's basically like you're staying there for free when you think about the, I mean, I'm going to spend $100 on dinner and I'm going to spend $100 on drinks while I'm there.
Yeah.
So.
So you get, they're called, you have to, it's.
Yeah.
Almost an obligation.
And
when
then
it's
like,
that, when it's that cheap for you, it's an obligation to go out there.
Exactly. And then because I'm a Diamond member at Caesars, right? I can go over to the Caesars property. I get four drinks a day for free.
Now, just how much are we drinking?
I mean,
if you're going to get $100 free bucks of drinks,
yeah,
at one place,
yeah,
and then you've got first four drinks free at Caesars,
yeah,
you're not going. Are you going to come out of there walking?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying. I have the. I have a
because
a,
the
a
highlight,
comrade.
The
maybe
highlight
a
of the
companion.
Perks, the highlight of the perks seems to be the. The swimming pools of alcohol that you'll be in.
Oh, that's the other thing. You get a day of stadium swim as included. You get a day
I
bet.
I just reminded you of another perk.
You get a day bet, so I'll come back with a tan on your ass. I'll come back looking like you, man.
And coming after your hangover.
Yeah. Because
at some point, that's going to hit you 30-something-year-old now.
But no, I will definitely go to the I'll get the tour of UNLV with Pastner.
We're gonna need it.
I'll knock it all out.
God, Josh is out there. He's going to roll out the red carpet for you as soon as you get off the plane.
As he should.
As he should?
Yeah. I mean, don't forget, I am a national correspondent of Field of 68.
Bro, none of us here, all of our listeners, we haven't forgotten it that you were national now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they call, and we had a meeting, and they said
so
they want
to. It makes you more valuable to Josh, more important.
100%.
Yes.
Make no mistake about it. So, yeah, my plan definitely is to go out there, especially because, like you said, the Grizz will be out there, all of them.
Because you can spew his narrative for him nationally now.
We'll have a top five. We'll have a top five, top six pick out there as part of our group at Lyft. So we're looking forward to that.
How's that doing?
Doing great.
Okay.
Doing great. We'll have Jeremiah Fears.
You got me very excited about his future.
So you know, I think I don't know. We have some like Boogie Fland is another guy, right?
Did I see the other dude on the Celtics?
J.D. Davison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
He's still there.
I was once laughing at that signing.
Yeah.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. That it's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.